today on Eco Report.
Basically, we have 10 years to save the last deep wild forests of our state forests.
Mike Lertzema of the Indiana Forest Alliance talks about their Wild Indiana campaign to set aside wild areas in the Hoosier State Forest System.
Eco Report is a weekly public affairs program
providing independent media coverage
of environmental and ecological studies
with a focus on local, state, and regional people, issues, and events
in order to foster open discussion
of human relationships with nature and the earth,
and to encourage you to take personal responsibility for living sustainably in the world.
Eco Report is produced by an independent team of volunteers
working at the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana,
and financially supported by listeners like you.
Good morning and welcome to Eco Report for WFHB. I'm David Lyman.
And I'm Juliana Daly, bringing you environmental watchdog reporting from South Central Indiana.
Last week, the EPA issued a new rule that defines which waters are protected under the Federal Clean Water Act. The rule came in response to a decision nearly a decade ago by the Supreme Court, in which the court pointed out the confusion over exactly what waters are covered by the act. Navigable tributaries, as well as the rivers they feed into, are protected because the flow of these streams and creeks could affect the health of rivers and lakes. Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Gina McCarthy, who announced the rule, said it safeguards waters such as wetlands that adjoin those waterways. What Ms. McCarthy did not point out was the ruling should also protect ocean coastal areas that are the nurseries for the oceans. There was confusion over whether a permit was required to pollute everything from a stream near urban development to a ditch on a farm. The EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers looked at 1,200 peer-reviewed studies and held 400 meetings in communities with stakeholders to design the waters of the United States rule. The ruling will not get in the way of agriculture and recognizes the crucial role that farmers play. Thus, the ruling does not apply to a drainage ditch used by farmers to keep excess water off the fields. Artificial ponds and lakes on private property are exempt. The rule covers navigable waters, but not the large majority of ephemeral streams that do not impact waters downstream. Only ditches that are constructed out of streams or function like streams and can carry pollution downstream are protected. The explanations did not sway powerful critics of this Senate. Senator James M. Inhofe, Republican from Oklahoma, chairman of the Environmental and Public Works Committee, blasted the rule. When the new rule was proposed, Inhofe and various Republican colleagues asked that it address elements he viewed as an overreach by adding protections for farmers. They wanted a rule that did not include waters in isolated ponds and ditches. Predictably, Governor Mike Pence is not happy with the ruling because he says it would vastly expand federal meddling in management of inland waterways. The ruling did not address the issue of creating a buffer zone between crops and stream beds to reduce erosion and reduce toxins such as pesticides and fertilizers before they enter the watershed.
According to Kim Ferraro from Hoosier Environmental Council, the new clean water rule released by the EPA along with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers will better protect rivers and streams in Indiana and across the U.S. from pollution. Ferraro said the new rule will restore Clean Water Act protections for headwaters, some streams, and wetland habitat left uncertain by two U.S. Supreme Court rulings. Ferraro also said the new rule would safeguard drinking water supplies. In addition to drinking water, Ferraro said the at-risk waters provide essential fish and wildlife habitat that helps support Indiana's outdoor recreation economy. It's estimated that about 900,000 people commented to the EPA in support of the Clean Water Rule.
A state biologist has just photographed one of Monroe Lake's original and oldest bald eagles. The original eagles were released in the late 1980s when the State Department of Natural Resources began its restoration program at Monroe Lake. Bald eagles were a federally endangered species when the division began the reintroduction program. The original program, eagles are identifiable by an orange color band on one wing and metal leg bands. DNR employees identified the eagle as one that had been assigned the name C-43. It was taken from a nest in Whitestone Harbor, Alaska on July 22, 1988. The bird is now 27 years old. The Bird Banding Laboratory in Maryland has documented only six banded bald eagles that have lived longer, according to the DNR. Furthermore, a brood patch on her breast indicates that she is still raising young. Thanks to the success of the reintroduction program, there are now an estimated 200 to 250 eagle nesting areas in Indiana.
Climate change is threatening coffee crops in virtually every major coffee-producing region of the world. Scientists writing in the journal Science Direct documented that rising nighttime temperatures in the coffee-growing region of Tanzania led to the drop in yields for the Arabica bean crop. Other factors that impact yield include long droughts punctuated by intense rainfall, more resilient pests, and plant diseases. Because coffee varieties have adapted to specific climate zones, a temperature rise of even half a degree can make a big difference. Additionally, warming has expanded the habitat and thus the range and damage of the coffee berry borer. Coffee rust is a problem. This is a fungus that previously did not survive the cool mountain weather. Costa Rica, India, and Ethiopia, three of the top 15 coffee-producing nations in the world, have all seen a dramatic decline in yields. The declining supply of popular Arabica coffee beans grown in East and Central Africa, Latin America, India, and Indonesia is being felt in the pockets of suburban supermarket shoppers. Brands like Maxwell House, Uban, and Folgers have increased the retail prices of many grinds by 25% or more between 2010 and 2011 in light of tight supply and higher wholesale prices.
Throughout much of 2015, tornado activity has been near a record low. This is mostly due to a continuous air pattern of a trough in the east, which has brought colder than average temperatures there, and a ridge in the west, which has brought warmer than average temperatures in the west. The cold spells in the east have kept violent weather to a minimum. There have been very few tornadoes east of the Mississippi River. The southern branch of the jet stream is sending moist air into the nation's Gulf Coast or southern tier of states. This ends up running over cooler, more stable air. This warm, moist air cools, with the consequence being steady rains flooding Texas and Oklahoma. Another factor in fewer tornadoes may be the slower mid-latitude winds. The warming of the Arctic by 5 degrees Fahrenheit means the mid-latitude winds have weakened. This is certainly one of the reasons storm systems seem to stall. It may also mean fewer tornadoes.
Scientists will be sending ice to Antarctica. Specifically, they will use the frozen continent to store samples taken from glaciers. Currently, glacial ice samples are stored near the summit of Mont Blanc, but the problem is the storage chamber has warmed by 3 degrees Fahrenheit. There is concern that future warming will melt the glaciers even in the high Alps. Only a tiny amount of mountain glacier ice has ever been collected and studied. And in 2016, the Mont Blanc collection will become the first contributor to an Antarctic ice fault. The archive will be housed in a snow cave at the Concordia Research Station, a permanently manned base jointly operated by scientists from France and Italy. Stored safely in a giant frozen trench, the ice cores can simply be sealed in bags 30 feet below the surface, where the temperature maintains a steady temperature of minus 50 degrees centigrade. The reasoning is straightforward. Even with global warming, even if Antarctica warms up by a few degrees, Antarctica will still be the best freezer on the planet. In the Alps, the team can reach the site by helicopter. Their delicate cargo can be packed in specifically designed freezer crates and flown down the mountain. But a second mission in 2017 will be much harder. They will be going to a mountain in the Bolivian Andes. At 19,000 feet, the summit is too high for a helicopter, so the heavy drills and other equipment will need to be carried by hand. The teams will collect 3 ice cores from the Alps and 3 from the Andes. 2 from each location will be taken to Antarctica, while the others will be sent to a laboratory in France for analysis. Drilling down into this glacial ice and extracting an ice core means scientists are taking a journey back in time. Analyzing the bubbles tells them what the climate was like at different periods of the Earth's history. Scientists say the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is higher now than in the last 3 million years, and ice contains an absolutely unique record of our climate.
That's a look at EcoNews from Bloomington and beyond for this week. We want to know what you think of current environmental issues. Send your comments and story ideas to earth@wfhb.org. For Eco Report, I'm David Lyman.
And I'm Juliana Daly. Eco Report is brought to you in part by Solar Systems of Indiana, designing and installing renewable energy systems. SSI is a member of the North American Board of Certified Energy Practitioners and works to foster the acceptance of solar energy across the Midwest through education and consultation. More information by phone at 812-336-2785 or online at solarsystemsofindiana.com.
In today's Eco Report feature, Mike Lertzema of the Indiana Forest Alliance talks about their Wild Indiana campaign to set aside wild areas in the Indiana State Forest System.
Our pleasure to welcome Mike Lertzema here with us this morning. He's with the Indiana Forest Alliance, particularly involved with something called the Hoosier Watch program.
Today I'm going to talk about the Wild Indiana campaign because it's kind of the focus of our core mission. And so what we're responding to is an unprecedented increase in commercial logging in our state forests. And you can see from 2002 up through 2014, 2002 is about 1.4 million board feet, and 2004 is about 3.5. And then when a new administration came into the governor's office in 2005, early 2005, they appointed a new state forester who announced at that point a 400% increase in commercial logging in our state forests. And you can see that's happened. And now their goal is 14 million board feet per year on average. The Division of Forestry, which is under the DNR, the kind of logging that they do is primarily single tree and group tree selection. So one thing that they'll say is that, oh, this doesn't have as much of an impact as a clear cut, which is certainly true, that a single tree timber harvest doesn't have as much of an impact as a clear cut, because you're not taking every tree. But in order to meet this volume, which is more volume per year than was harvested on the Hoosier National Forest in the 80s, during the height of clear cutting in the 80s in the Hoosier National Forest, is more volume on the state forest through single tree selection than they were harvesting in the 80s from clear cutting in the Hoosier. So what that means in order to meet this volume is that they're taking a little bit here, a little bit there from everywhere. So the impact on the immediate area might not be as dramatic, but it's significant and it's happening all over the state forest. And so what that's led to is a rampant loss of interior forest habitat. So we have these small clear cuts, but they'll call them regeneration openings or patch cuts. And then this kind of erosion that happens on these logging roads with these 40-ton logging trucks and these skidder trails going through along all of the ridges in our state forest system and down every ridge into the ravine across the entire state forest system. The current logging program that we're trying to address in this campaign would log almost every tract of our state forest system every 17 to 20 years. And so it's been in place for about 10 years. It took a couple years to really get off the ground. Basically, we have 10 years to save the last deep wild forests of our state forests. these trails, the Knobs Center, the Tecumseh, and all these, you know, these smaller trails, people come from all around Indianapolis and Louisville to hike these trails. And what's happening is they'll get there and they'll see these signs because the trails will be closed because they'll be logged. And then once they're logged, then the character of them is altered for, you know, for a generation. There's still trees there often, but it doesn't look the same. And it's not what people are looking for according to DNR-sponsored surveys. Why do we want to protect these areas? Well, there's certain species like this eastern box turtle, which people might see all over the place in the spring when it's wet and they're crossing the roads and everything, but this is a state species of special concern. What's happened is that these turtles can live to be 60 or 80 years old, and a lot of the ones you see are mature and not reproducing. And in order for these species to reproduce, they need to actually see each other physically. They don't follow scent like other species or pheromones or any of that. They gotta see each other. The kind of forest type they're in southern Indiana have some of the most diverse salamander populations in the world. Some areas of the Appalachians have more species of salamander, but the forest types in southern Indiana host some of the most diverse salamander species in the world, which rely, again, on a closed canopy for soil and water temperature control, and also for moisture retention in the soil. If the canopy is opened up, the soil dries out and affects the species. In Indiana, 90% of saw timber milled in the state comes from private land. About 7% or so comes from the state forest. So the timber industry does not need timber from our state forests. The head of the Indiana Hardwood Lumbermen's Association said over lunch to me and our director, we don't need this lumber. It's a philosophical issue. If we give you an inch, you'll take a mile, is what they said. That's why they're fighting us on this. It's not that they need the timber, it's not an economic thing. It's they're afraid that if they compromise at all, then we're gonna come after everything. And we're of the position where right now it's so out of balance that we're just proposing something in the middle. We are encouraging people to write letters to the editor. People my age and younger might not read paper newspapers very much, but people who do are elected officials. And these letters to the editor are critical and have a major role in establishing the public conversation. It's a modern-day public forum, right? People see them as being representative of a public discourse. And the more this is in a public discourse on either side of the issue, the better, because we need to make this a public debate. Governor Pence has pointed me in my face and said, this is important, let's sit down and talk about this. And so we know it's on their radar. We've met with his aide, his policy director on the environment and natural resources twice. So we know it's on their radar. So what we're trying to do is put enough political pressure on them. And right now, when they're looking for ways to recover some sort of ground, save face in some way, we want to put enough pressure on them for them to, because Governor Pence can do this, sign a pen. He can send an email and reduce the levels of logging on the state forest by sending an email. So we want to make it politically convenient for him to do so. He rides horses and he trail rides. He's a trail rider for horses. He has a cabin in Brown County State Park that he frequents, and he considers himself a conservationist. So we want to hold him to that. Dan Willard, who's a former professor at SPIA, said people will protect the places that they love, but they only love the places that they know. So I encourage people to spend more time in the woods. It's the most important thing for anybody who's involved in protecting the environment. Be familiar with your forests. The idea of public lands is a uniquely American idea, the idea that there's public lands and that the public owns, that anybody can go to. And that's something that we really should appreciate and value and be familiar with these areas. And in southern Indiana, we're blessed.
How much greater is growth than harvest?
Oh, yeah.
Your canyon.
The DNR, depending on which document you're looking at, they'll say there's about 24 million board feet of growth per year on the state forest system. They're cutting 14. So that's a number they point to often to say what we're doing is sustainable, which sounds really convincing, but from our perspective is that what you're removing are these maturing trees that are, you know, 60 to 100 years old, and what's replacing those, if you're just counting board feet, is smaller. So you're changing the forest type. You might have more board feet, but the type of forest that is being created from this program, it's altering the character. The DNR differentiates, and I would too, between virgin timber and old growth. We honestly try to shy away from the term old growth because we think that that is misrepresentative of what is actually in a climax state forest, because in a climax forest that's allowed to develop its natural life cycle, there's all sorts of ages of size classes. It's not just all big old trees. There's trees that have fallen, there's rotting trees, there's trees that are different shapes, there's openings where trees have fallen or where insect infestations have come through and created these openings that other regeneration is happening naturally. So we actually try to shy away from that term old growth because there is no real definition of that. Public forests are the only opportunity in the state to set aside some large contiguous chunks. We're not trying to lock up the entire state forest system. We want it to be accessible to the public for the recreation element, which we also think is important, a kind of recreation that can't happen on the state parks. So the public forests are really the only areas that we can do that. We have no interest in telling the private landowners what to do with their land.
It's 11:50 a.m. and you're listening to Eco Report on WFHB, bringing you environmental watchdog reporting from South Central Indiana. Would you like to join the Eco Report crew? WFHB is looking for volunteer reporters and engineers to join our award-winning news department. We provide training and will work with all schedules. Just bring your love for the environment. For more information, email volunteer@wfhb.org or call 812-323-1200.
It's time now for In Nature, a segment focusing on the flora and fauna of South Central Indiana.
This is In Nature. In a game of cards, sometimes all you need is a good bluff. The North American species of hognose snakes have a couple of these bluffs up their metaphorical sleeves. There are three separate species of hognose snake in the U.S., the southern, the western, and the eastern. The eastern hognose is the one you might find in Indiana. They are rather timid and shy snakes and will often hide from predators by burrowing down into leaves, sand, and so forth. The name, hognose, comes from their upturned snout, which aids them in digging in sandy soils. Their first bluff, when threatened by a predator, is to flatten their neck and raise their head off of the ground like a cobra and hiss. They will sometimes do closed mouth strikes at the same time, rather like a high-speed headbutt. This behavior has earned them a variety of nicknames, including puff adder, blowing adder, and spreading adder, just to name a few. They are not actually in the adder family, but are in the harmless colubrid family, which also includes snakes such as the rat snake and the corn snake. They will also sometimes rapidly vibrate their tail at the same time, causing a buzzing sound, especially in leaf litter, which makes them sound like a rattlesnake. Should this first bluff fail to deter would-be predators, the hognose snake has a second trick. They will often writhe about in agony and then play dead, ending up on their backs and letting their tongue hang out. Attempt to turn them over, and they will continually roll on their backs as if somehow proving that they are dead. The snake may be playing dead, but is carefully keeping an eye on the predator the entire time. As soon as the threat is either not looking at them or has gone, the little hognose snake will right itself and escape. You've been listening to In Nature.
Now a few local events of interest with our weekly event calendar. You may join the Indiana Forest Alliance for a second Sunday slow saunter on June 14th in Yellowwood State Forest. The hike will take place along Mussup Ridge and a section of the Tecumseh Trail in proposed Mussup Ridge State Wild Area in Yellowwood State Forest. The 3-mile hike is moderate in difficulty, following a ridge lined and containing no exceedingly steep climbs. Meet at 1 o'clock p.m. in the parking area on the east side of Crooked Creek Road, about 2 miles south of State Road 46. To carpool from Bloomington, please meet in the Seminary Square Kroger parking lot at 12:15 p.m.
The Monroe County Energy Challenge, MCEC, seeks individuals from across the community to act as energy ambassadors in neighborhoods, workplaces, faith communities, and other subpopulations as part of the local effort to win the $5 million Georgetown University Energy Prize. Monroe County is competing with 50 communities across the country to reduce residential, municipal, and K-12 energy usage throughout 2015 and 2016.
Native plants are required to support local ecosystems, but invasive plants are rapidly crowding them out. Sustaining Nature and Your Land, SNAYL Day, provides information about how you can encourage the growth of beautiful, life-supporting native plants on your property while controlling the invasive plants that threaten them. Lunch will be available for purchase. This event takes place this Saturday, June 6th, between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. It is free and for all ages. The location is Harmony School, 909 East 2nd Street.
Indiana residents do not need a fishing license or trout salmon stamp to fish in Indiana's public waters on June 6th and 7th. Many fun fishing events are taking place across the state, including family learn to fish workshops in Carmel, Goshen, Osceola, Indianapolis, Edinburgh, and Evansville. For more information, you may go to the Department of Natural Resources website and click on the Free Fishing Days link.
This wraps up our show for this week. Eco Report is brought to you in part by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
This week's news stories were written by Linda Green, Norm Holy, and Kara Tallman. Our feature was produced by Norm Holy. Our broadcast engineer is Dan Withard. This week's calendar was compiled by Felice Cicek. Eco Report is produced by Dan Young and Felice Cicek. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Juliana Daly.
And I'm David Lyman. Join us next week on Eco Report, encouraging you to take personal responsibility for the world in which we live.
You've been listening to the Eco Report,
a volunteer-powered production of Community Radio WFHB
in Bloomington, Indiana.
Available for download and podcast at news.wfhb.org.
Eco Report is your independent, ecologically inspired news source
for South Central Indiana.
Bringing you news that the Earth wants you to hear.
Send your comments, suggestions, and story ideas
directly to the Eco Report staff.
The email address is
earth@wfhb.org.
That's earth@wfhb.org.